Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Mackie. Today is Wednesday, March the 2nd, 2022. I'll be reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram. Sparks confident he will avoid runoff. State Senator candidate, votes outstanding are in areas where we should do well, by Stuart Doreen. It appears Kevin Sparks will avoid the runoff he's been dreading during the latter parts of his campaign for state senator. With 78.5% of the vote in and 55.2% of the vote collected, Sparks was feeling good that Midland was finally going to be home to a state senator. Sparks campaign officials said late Tuesday there was a 95% chance Sparks would avoid a runoff with Tim Reed of Amarillo. During a recent campaign stop in Midland, officials with the campaign said they hoped to avoid the considerable resources it would take to continue to the latter part of May. "It is not official yet, but it looks really good at this point," Sparks said Tuesday night. "The votes outstanding are in areas where we should do well. It was known for a while that District 31 would have a new senator. Current Senator Kel Seliger, Republican of Amarillo, announced a while back he would not seek re-election. That opened the field early for Sparks to announce and work an electorate, including up in the Amarillo area. District 31 covers more than 40 counties from the Amarillo area past Midland-Odessa into more central Texas. Sparks told the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday that he thought it was key that some people embraced our vision of Texas in the north part of the district, and they worked hard for our campaign. The oilman said people across the district could relate to his business background, whether they were ranchers, farmers, or coffee shop owners. Along the way, Sparks collected endorsements from former President Donald Trump and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who commented that it was time to have an oil expert among the Senate body. Sparks' win is a victory for Midland and Odessa leaders that have long sought the seat. Amarillo had long held the seat with Seliger and Teal Bivens before him. Even Sparks' father, Don Sparks, ran for the state Senate seat nearly 20 years ago. Sparks realizes the significance of winning the Republican nomination, which means winning the seat as there is no Democratic candidate. "I'm not sure it is setting in yet," Sparks said about the long wait. "There is some excitement about that possibility." Johnson wins lopsided county judge race, by Stuart Doreen. "Let the band play, listen to the music," by the Doobie Brothers. Terry Johnson has been victorious again. The county judge guaranteed himself 4 more years with a convincing victory over Jonah Smoot. The unofficial final total showed Johnson with 9,296 votes. Smoot collected 4,748. Johnson praised the up-and-comer to the Midland political scene, but said Midland is certainly a community that liked what they have seen over the last 4 years. "I was glad to see Midland has a voice." Johnson won big on a night when voters might have also given him the court he always wanted. He talked about the victories Tuesday night being critical to Midland and Greenwood. He said while Precinct 2 Commissioner Robin Donnelly has played an awesome role in county government, Greenwood felt left out of the process, and Jeff Summers will provide a voice there. Randy Prude usually cast the second of the 3 votes against Johnson's 2 in some high-profile votes earlier in Johnson's first term. On Tuesday, Diane Anderson collected more votes than Prude, although the Precinct 4 seat will be decided in a runoff. Johnson ran his race talking about promises he said he had kept. He campaigned on bringing water to areas of the county without a reliable source. He said during the campaign he will continue to focus on roads and working with the city of Midland. He also told those at the Cuthbert Mansion on Tuesday night that no matter how the night turned out, he was honored to have served as county judge in the place where he was raised. It really was a win-win, Johnson said. He also said Tuesday night's electoral outcome was about what the people and my supporters wanted. I know now what that means, and that is what it was. Anderson tallies most votes in Precinct 4 commissioner race by Stuart Doreen. Diane Anderson is on her way to a runoff for the Precinct 4 seat on the commissioner's court. Anderson collected the most votes in the three-person race that included incumbent Randy Prude. Anderson had 1,931 votes, 40.7%. Prude, 1,623, and Charles Hall, 1,181, according to unofficial final results. Anderson and Prude will compete in a primary runoff for the Republican nomination on May 24th. Anderson said she knocked on more than 2,000 doors during her return to politics. The former Midland ISD school board member said there were issues like roads and water that are important to Precinct 4 residents, but the horseshoe complex was the number one topic. The thing that resounded with voters was having a new contract with the horseshoe in 2023 that favors the county, Anderson said Tuesday. Anderson is the second person with school board ties to collect the most votes in a county commissioner race. Jeff Summers was the other. She said running for commissioner's court is much different than running for school board because of the ground one must cover knocking on doors and meeting people. She said that a person could meet hundreds of potential voters at PTA meetings and such. She said that really doesn't happen often in a commissioner's campaign. The difference this time was I had to work a lot harder, Anderson said. The area is at least twice what the school board area was. With the school board talking at schools, you knew where the audience was. This race, the audience was when you knocked on a door. Summers captures big victory in Precinct 2 commissioner race by Stuart Doreen. The man who said all along that he represented potential change on the commissioner's court rolled to a win in a precinct that includes Central Midland and Greenwood. The member of the Greenwood ISD school board, Jeff Summers, led big early and throughout the night over the capable representative of Precinct 2 for more than a decade, Robin Donnelly. Summers collected the most votes during the early voting period and then basically doubled up Donnelly on Election Day. Overall, Summers collected 2,994 votes compared to Donnelly's 1,679. Summers said he expected success. He knew that he could count on support not only in eastern and southeast Midland County, but also in central or old Midland, where his signs covered neighborhood after neighborhood. Heading into Tuesday night's election, precincts inside Central Midland were among the top voting precincts inside the county, so doing well there was mandatory. Summers said pulling off a win was connecting with an electorate looking for a little bit of change. Summers ran his campaign representing just that. Summers said during the campaign that he wasn't necessarily against much of what the commissioner's court had done. He even commented Tuesday night that the matchup with Donnelly was a clean one. However, he always stated he represented a different conservative vote. He said he could identify with both parts of the precinct, having been raised in Central Midland and having spent the last part of his life in Greenwood. It is there that he has seen tremendous growth, the impact on the roads and the need for water. I am not surprised of the outcome, but glad people got out and voted, Summers said. Small Bites, Your Guide to Mardi Gras, Lent Offerings by J.C. Lewis. Mardi Gras happened this week, and while Midland isn't New Orleans, local businesses still offer ways to celebrate. Mardi Gras is rooted in the Catholic tradition as the final day of revelry before Lent, but is celebrated throughout Louisiana. Lent is a period of austerity that leads up to Easter. Whether searching for king cake or some seafood boils, Midland has options. Mardi Gras events. Golden Whisk is serving up king cakes, Mardi Gras cookies, and cake pops. Call 432-262-1041 to order. Abstaining from meat for Lent? Doris J's Kitchen offers a salmon rice bowl during the Lent season along with salmon croquettes, catfish sandwiches, blackened catfish, and grilled catfish. Golden Chick has brought back butterfly shrimp for the Lenten season. The butterfly shrimp will be available with two combo meals, either southern fried catfish pieces or golden tenders. They will be available on the menu until April 24th. The butterfly shrimp were introduced on Golden Chick's Lenten menu in 2020. Golden Chick selected a larger panko breaded option that is larger and more appealing than typical popcorn shrimp. The butterfly shrimp comes with a side of cocktail sauce. Arby's will feature two fish sandwiches. The crispy fish sandwich features Alaskan pollock, lettuce, and tartar sauce on a sesame seed bun, and the King's Hawaiian fish deluxe features tomato and cheddar cheese, then swaps out the bun for a King's Hawaiian bun. Dairy Queen will be offering a wild Alaskan pollock sandwich. Jack in the Box will bring back its standard and deluxe versions of its fish sandwich. The sandwich features a panko-crusted Alaskan pollock fillet. The deluxe sandwich offers a double patty and two slices of American cheese. The Bites. The Midland Downtown Farmers Market will be from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Celebrate Dr. Seuss Day with cookies and other decorated sweets from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Golden Whisk. Dr. Seuss Brunch will be Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Barrel and Derrick. Presso Tea Midland will host a grand opening on Saturday at 11 a.m. at 4416 Briarwood Avenue, Suite 112. The shop is a bubble tea store that opened its first location in Odessa. There will be a live DJ and dance group performance. Cowboy Spirits will be having a grand opening at 1 p.m. Saturday at 4230 North Midland Drive. The event will feature two cocktail tastings, a whiskey tasting, and a dessert wine pairing with sweet treats. Cafe at the Gardens will begin hosting brunch every Saturday at the cafe. Starting Saturday, the cafe will have brunch every Saturday beginning at 10 a.m. at 3300 North Fairgrounds Road. The Taste of the Permian Basin has moved from the Bush Convention Center to the Horseshoe Pavilion on April 29th. The 37th annual event hosts dozens of local restaurants featuring their culinary delights. Tickets can be purchased at tastethebasin.com. Obituaries. John Williams. John Raymond Ray Williams, 89, of Midland, Texas, passed away peacefully on February 21, 2022, at home while holding his loving wife's hand, surrounded by family members who love him dearly. Most often known as Ray Williams or Papa, he was born July 9, 1932, in Ector County, Texas. He married his lifelong best friend, Jackie Lee Kinsey, on July 29, 1950, for a wonderful, loving, dedicated marriage of 71 years. John Raymond Williams celebrated a large family of four children and many grandchildren. Billy Williams, Deborah Reese, David Williams, and Raymond Williams, 11 grandchildren, 21 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild on the way. Billy Williams and David Williams preceded their father, Ray, in death. Please join the Williams family as we celebrate Ray Williams' amazing legacy in life. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrook.com. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, March 5th, at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel, 1311 West Florida Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Death Notices. Augustus Guzman. Augustus Guzman of Odessa died February 26, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Evan Hernan Trevino. Evan Hernan Trevino of Odessa died on February 20, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Gilberto Cervantes Carrillo. Gilberto Cervantes Carrillo, 93, of Midland, passed away Sunday, February 27, 2022. Viewing will be Wednesday, March 2, 2022, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday, March 3, 2022, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. that evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, March 4, 2022, at 2 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Arrangements were made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. John Ellis Curry. John Ellis Curry, 56, of Odessa, passed away February 27, 2022. The family will receive guests from 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. Thursday, March 3, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 2 o'clock p.m. Friday, March 4, 2022, at Fairview Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rachel L. Powers. Rachel L. Powers of Odessa died February 19, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Saul Gamboa. Saul Gamboa, 60, of Midland, passed away February 28, 2022. The family will receive guests from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Sunday, March 6, 2022, at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch. Funeral service will be held at 12 o'clock p.m. Monday, March 7, 2022, at the Branch at Nally Pickle Welch, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, March 2, 2022. Attorneys for Death Row Inmate Seek Stay of Execution by Kim Smith. The attorneys for Midland Spider Gonzalez have asked Ector County District Court Judge John Schroed to stop his execution, which is scheduled for next Tuesday, saying they have new evidence that could prove he didn't murder an Odessa couple. A hearing on the matter has been scheduled for Friday morning. Richard Burr's motion details that Odessa Police Department Crime Scene Unit Supervisor Stephanie Brothwell recently found 136 latent fingerprint cards in a storage box. They are prints that were collected from the home of murder victims Manuel and Merced Aguirre, and more than 60 fingerprints are suitable for comparison purposes. The attorneys wrote it will take months to compare the fingerprints to other known fingerprints. Burr is also asking for additional DNA testing to be done. Eric Dryden, the assistant attorney general assigned to the Gonzalez case, said he could not comment when reached Tuesday morning. Authorities believe Gonzalez stabbed the Aguirres to death after they woke up to find Gonzalez, their neighbor, burglarizing their home on April 22, 1994. He was convicted and sentenced to death in December 1995. He was sentenced to death again in 2009. Burr contends Gonzalez is innocent and has named three other men as the real killers, men who were suspects in the case, but never charged. According to his motion, he has one witness who says one of the three confessed his involvement in the murders to him, and another witness who says two of the men threatened Gonzalez to keep him quiet about their commission of the crime. According to the court document, one of the men told a defense investigator his blood was at the scene, and a recent examination of the man's flannel shirt, which was seized by police but never introduced at trial, revealed there are stains on its inner lining. Authorities discovered in 2003 blood on the outside of the shirt belonged to the Aguirres, but Burr wants the stain on the inside of the shirt tested to confirm they are blood and that the blood belongs to the alternative suspect who had wounds on his arms in the days after the Aguirres died. Gonzalez, Burr wrote, did not have any wounds to his hands or arms. In addition, Burr alleges Gonzalez should not be executed because he suffers from intellectual disabilities, and prosecutors hid the fact the lead police investigator had a long history of misconduct and dishonesty. Burr also wants to vacate the execution date because they say the assistant attorney general who sought the execution date was unconstitutionally appointed as district attorney pro tem. Gonzalez is currently the only person convicted by an Ector County jury on death row. Still reading from the front page, 2022 GOP primary. Texas Governor winner Greg Abbott. State Representative District 81 winner Brooks Landgraf. District Judge runoff Cindy Wiernut and Lori Ruiz Crutcher. County Judge winner Dustin Fawcett. District Clerk winner Clarissa Webster. County Commissioner Precinct 2 winner Greg Simmons. JP1 winner Terry Lange. JP2 winner Missy Walden. JP3 winner Bill Bowden. 2022 Democratic primary. County Commissioner Precinct 4 winner Savannah Morales. JP Precinct 4 winner, Elizabeth Baeza. OC Board approves Honors College by OA News. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved starting an Honors College during a board meeting Monday. Dean of the Liberal Arts and Education with STEM, Purvis Evans, said the administrative team recently approved starting the Honors College at OC for fall 2020. The purpose is to offer rigorous coursework and honors distinction and enrichment learning opportunities. Students must have a minimum 3.5 grade point average in high school, and dual credit students must be juniors or seniors at the time of entry. A third of students over the past 3 years have earned a 3.5 plus grade point average, Evans said. He added that they are anticipating 5 to 10% of students would pursue the Honors College opportunities. Honor College students must maintain a minimum 3.25 GPA, complete 2 honors courses within 2 years, volunteer 2 hours in the community per semester, engage in 2 Honors College activities per semester, complete a capstone project, research paper, or internship. They would be recognized with the honors distinction on their transcript and at graduation. There will also be honors fellows scholars. The requirements are similar, but the number of honors courses would increase to 4, as will the volunteer hours and activities. They would also be presented at an Honors College symposium or conference, Evans said. It would be open to any student, but they would prefer that students are on track toward an associate or bachelor's degree. Evans said they have great participation in their Phi Theta Kappa organization, and they would be targeted for the Honors College, as would early college high school students. On a separate item, the board approved the OC Promise Program to start in 2024. The program will be opening to graduating seniors that will be part of the class of 24 that will be first-time in college students beginning in summer or August 2024. It will cover tuition and fees. Programs around the nation have increased the first-time in college going rates and graduation rates. It's not easy to do what we're doing. It's taken 75 years. This is going to be transformative, President Gregory Williams said. Obituaries. Odelia Lila Jimenez, Odessa. Odelia Jimenez, 88, beloved wife and mother of 8, passed away on February 28th in Odessa. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 2nd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, March 3rd at St. Elizabeth and Seton Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Odelia was born in Morales, Coahuila, Mexico, to Mauro and Natalia Rodriguez on August 20, 1933. She married Ruben J. Jimenez on September 24, 1955. Odelia is preceded in death by her parents, her son-in-law, H. Dean Gallegos, and her grandson, Jacob Jimenez. Odelia is survived by her husband, Ruben J. Jimenez Sr., her children, Ruben and his wife, Janet, Geraldo and his wife, Debbie, Arcelia J. Gallegos and her husband Gilbert Anaya, Salvador Jimenez, Juanita Gonzalez, Luis Jimenez, Albert Jimenez and his wife Sonia, and Javier Jimenez and his wife Christy, as well as many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Dorothy Ann Lucas, Longview. Dorothy Ann Lucas passed away from this life on February 24th in Longview, Texas, at the age of 66, and was born December 1st, 1955, in Monroe, Louisiana, to Rosie and Carl Lucas. She married Kenneth Dusty Sewell in 1972. She is preceded in death by her parents, Rosie and Carl Lucas, husband Kenneth Dusty Sewell, and her brother Lester Lucas. She is survived by her children Jennifer and Brad Hawthorne, Jamie and Brian Ray, Dusty and Erica Sewell, O.C. Sewell, Chastity and Ben, Brom Stimler, 13 grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. Siblings Dwight and Viola Lucas, Chester and Becky Lucas, and Jean Lucas. Funeral services will be held at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home of Odessa, Texas, on March 1st at 10 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences, sign the guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Manuel Lolo Dominguez Vega, Odessa. Manuel Lolo Dominguez Vega, 81 of Odessa, died Monday, February 28th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel. Augustine Gussman, Odessa. Augustine Gussman, 39, died Saturday, February 26th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Joanne Perryman, Odessa. Joanne Perryman, 81, died Tuesday, March 1st, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Rachel L. Powers, Odessa. Rachel L. Powers, 92, died Saturday, February 19th, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Funeral Home. Jackie Mae Guy Rex, Odessa. Jackie Mae Guy Rex, 76, died Thursday, February 3rd, in Midland. Services are pending with Willowbrook Funeral Home. Ernan Trevino, Odessa. Ernan Trevino, 61, died Sunday, February 20th, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. From the bottom of the front page, oil soars above $106 a barrel, commodity up most since 2009, by Bloomberg. Oil extended gains after the close as a decision by the U.S. and other major economies to release emergency stockpiles failed to ease concerns of a major shortfall in supplies as sanctions mount on Russia. West Texas Intermediate futures in New York traded above $106 after settling at $103.41 a barrel on Tuesday. The International Energy Agency agreed to deploy 60 million barrels from stockpiles around the world, which amounts to less than 6 days of Russian output. Financial sanctions against Russia continue to mount, raising the specter of a major global supply disruption. The invasion of Ukraine has upended commodity markets from oil to natural gas and wheat, piling inflationary pressure on governments. Commodity prices soared the most since 2009 with the Bloomberg Commodities Spot Index, which tracks 23 futures contracts, climbing 4.6% on Tuesday. West Texas Intermediate for April delivery rose to $106.34 at 3:50 p.m. in New York after settling at $103.41 a barrel. "We are quite afraid that we are going to lose supply from Russia," said Bart Melick, head of commodity strategy at TD Securities. "The release from strategic reserves does not seem to be enough." The rally was further strengthened by options positioning, as prices blew past key levels like $100, where traders had amassed bullish positions. Banks that sold those contracts found themselves exposed. As banks are forced to buy futures to cover their risk, the rally snowballs. While the U.S. and Europe have so far stopped short of imposing sanctions directly on Russian commodities, the trade in those raw materials is seizing up as banks pull financing and shipping costs surge. Russia is the world's third biggest oil producer and, along with Saudi Arabia, an influential member of the OPEC Plus alliance. Wall Street banks, including Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated, Morgan Stanley, and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, have boosted their oil price forecasts, anticipating possible supply disruptions. Consultant OilX said the probability of heavy disruption of seaborne Russian crude and products is growing, which could push prices above $150 a barrel. The industry-funded American Petroleum Institute reported on Tuesday that U.S. crude supplies decreased 6.1 million barrels last week, according to people familiar with the data. The data also showed stockpiles in Cushing, Oklahoma, the biggest storage hub in the U.S., declined by about 1 million barrels. The U.S. government will release its weekly inventory tally today. The turmoil sparked by the invasion will bring a new challenge in balancing a tightening market for OPEC Plus, which meets today to discuss output policy. Delegates said the cartel will probably stick to its plan of only gradually increasing supply. President Vladimir Putin spoke to the leader of the UAE ahead of the meeting, while Saudi Arabia said it supports efforts to reduce escalation in Ukraine. Indications of just how tight supply has been is showing in the market structure. Brent remains deep in backwardization, where prompt barrels command higher prices than later dated cargoes. The benchmark's prompt time spread was $3.93 a barrel in backwardation after surging on Tuesday. Oil curve becomes super backwardization bullish on Russia risk. Traders are paying the biggest premium in more than 2 years to bet on higher oil prices as Russia's invasion of Ukraine extend crude's relentless rally. The premium for Brent call options soared to over a 2-year high, underscoring the magnitude of bullish sentiment in the oil market. Talks on the coordinated release are currently focused on tapping 30 million barrels from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve and an equivalent amount from a group of other countries, the people said. No decisions have been made, and the discussions could continue for several more days, they said. Prior to the pandemic, global oil consumption was about 100 million barrels a day. The invasion of Ukraine is also prompting oil companies to wind up their operations in Russia. Shell PLC and BP PLC have announced they will pull out, while Total Energies SE said Tuesday it will no longer invest in new projects in the country. These are stories from the Business and Oil page. Chevron calls on Biden to support U.S. oil, by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg LP. Chevron Corporation said any short-term efforts by the Biden administration and its allies to ease crude prices should be backed up by long-term commitments to support investment in America's domestic oil industry. President Joe Biden and other major economies have agreed on a coordinated release of 60 million barrels of oil from stockpiles around the world after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, people familiar with the matter said Tuesday. Without a balanced and pragmatic conversation about energy security and transition, such a move would have little long-term effect, Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth said on a call with reporters. What would be best to accompany a reserve release would be an attitude to support investment in U.S. resource development, Wirth said. That would ensure that this country remains strong from an energy security standpoint. The domestic oil industry has felt shunned by the Biden administration since it took office due to restrictions on drilling federal lands in its oiling early days, followed up by pleas to OPEC to increase oil production once prices became elevated. As the war in Ukraine brings the possibility of sanctions that would limit the trade in crude from Russia, one of the world's biggest producers, America's oil industry could be one of Biden's best ways of reducing energy prices. In the early months, I wish there had been more dialogue than there was, Wirth said at a presentation later with analysts in New York. The administration had their priorities, and the interaction with us was lower on the list than some other things. Leading oil executives believe governments, including the U.S., have been lulled into a false sense of security on cheap oil and gas supply over the past decade, partly due to the growth in shale, while focusing too heavily on climate change. Now, with commodity shortages and prices skyrocketing around the world, it's time for a change, they say. Devon Energy Corporation CEO Rick Muncrief said Monday he was mystified why there hadn't been any dialogue between the administration and oil producers at a time when the country is facing severe energy challenges. An appeal from the president may have provided some incentive for U.S. shale to accelerate production growth and ease what's fast becoming a major driver of cost inflation around the world, Muncrief said. Senator Joe Manchin, a West Virginia Democrat, joined the fray Monday evening, calling for a series of hearings on energy independence. We produce energy cleaner than anybody in the world, Manchin said. We're buying 650,000 barrels a day from Russia. It's ridiculous, totally ridiculous. Chevron hopes to have good constructive dialogue with this administration going forward, Wirth said. There's much common ground between both the government and oil industry's goals, he added. Biden aide says oil companies can increase production if they want. By Jordan Fabian, Kaylee Lenz, and Gay Johnson, Bloomberg LP. A White House official said Tuesday that U.S. oil and gas companies should increase production if they want, pushing back against executives who have criticized Biden administration energy policies as prices soar. Prices are quite high. The price signal is strong. If folks want to produce more, they can and they should, White House National Economic Council Deputy Director Bharat Ramareddy said in a Bloomberg television interview. Ramareddy said there are 9,000 unused leases that the U.S. government has provided for oil and gas production, and people are free to use them if they'd like to. The idea that there's some kind of severe restriction on that production is simply untrue, he added. President Joe Biden faces pressure to do more to lower oil prices, which have helped drive inflation to levels not seen in decades. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has exacerbated the problem, sending West Texas Intermediate to more than $100 a barrel on Tuesday. Chevron Corporation Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth said Tuesday that any short-term measures to reduce prices, such as releasing barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, should be paired with more support for domestic oil producers. West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin also called on the White House to help boost U.S. oil production. We're buying 650,000 barrels a day from Russia. It's ridiculous, totally ridiculous, Manchin said Monday. Devon Energy Corporation CEO Rick Muncrief said in an interview with Bloomberg News this week that he's a little mystified the White House hasn't reached out to his company about increasing production. Ramarudi said the administration is taking an all-of-the-above approach when it comes to oil prices, including releasing barrels from the SPR and urging OPEC plus nations to ramp up production. The U.S. and other major economies agreed to a coordinated release of 60 million barrels from stockpiles around the world, the International Energy Agency announced Tuesday. Under the agreement, the U.S. will release 30 million barrels. OPEC Plus Smaller Oil Market Surplus Before Meeting by Salma El Wardney, Bloomberg LP. OPEC Plus technical experts revised down their expectations for the oil market surplus the day before ministers meet to set production policy for April. The group has revised down the forecast for this year's daily oil surplus by about 200,000 barrels to 1.1 million barrels, according to the base case in a report that will be reviewed by OPEC Plus experts later on Tuesday. The data, prepared for the OPEC Plus Joint Technical Committee, which presents a report to ministers when they meet today, shows fuel stockpiles in developed nations standing at 62 million barrels below the 2015 to 2019 average by the end of the year, compared with a previous forecast of 20 million barrels. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners, a 23-nation group including Russia, have come under pressure in recent months to raise production faster and rein in oil prices. The group has so far signaled no change in their output policy of releasing an additional 400,000 barrels a day each month onto the market. In January, the group has produced 972,000 barrels a day less than the targets outlined in the deal, another report by the JTC shows. U.S. diesel prices at nine-year high by Chanzi Xu, Bloomberg LP. U.S. farmers and truckers are paying the highest price for diesel in 9 years after oil soared above $100 a barrel amid intensifying sanctions against Russia. The average retail diesel price rose to $4.016 per gallon on Tuesday, the highest level since late March 2013, according to Auto Club AAA. Ultra-low sulfur diesel futures traded in New York, meanwhile, hit a fresh eight-year high of $3.2008 on Tuesday. That's a bad omen for consumers because pump prices typically track the futures within a few weeks. Farmers operating diesel-powered machinery are expected to burn lots more of the fuel as they plant the largest combined corn, soy, and wheat crops since 2014. Highway truckers are racking up more miles than they did prior to the pandemic, adding to the strain on supplies. Soaring diesel prices are bad news for U.S. President Joe Biden, who has prioritized capping domestic fuel prices by avoiding direct sanctions on Russian energy exports. Yet oil is surging, and so is inflation. The strain on U.S. diesel markets may worsen if Europe turns to Gulf Coast refiners to replace Russian supplies under threat from shipping disruptions as well as financial sanctions. A tightening diesel market could pose a bigger challenge for Europe than a squeeze on crude, said David Wetch, chief economist at trading and shipping researcher Vortexa Limited. This is from the Nation and World page. Nations agree to release 60 million barrels of oil amid war by David McHugh, AP business writer, Frankfurt, Germany. The International Energy Agency's 31-member countries agreed Tuesday to release 60 million barrels of oil from their strategic reserves, half of that from the United States, to send a strong message to oil markets that supplies won't fall short after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The board of the Paris-based IEA made the decision at an extraordinary meeting of energy ministers chaired by U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm. She said in a statement that U.S. President Joe Biden approved a commitment of 30 million barrels and that the U.S. is ready to take additional measures if needed. The group's decision reflects our common commitment to address significant market and supply disruptions related to President Putin's war on Ukraine, Granholm said. Russia plays an outsized role on global energy markets as the third largest oil producer. Its exports of 5 million barrels of crude per day amounts to about 12% of the global oil trade. Some 60% goes to Europe and another 20% to China. So far, U.S. and European sanctions have not barred oil or gas exports and have included exceptions for transactions to pay for oil and gas. Western leaders are reluctant to restrict Russian oil exports at a time when global energy markets are tight and high prices are fueling inflation in developed economies. But the invasion has still shaken markets worldwide. On Tuesday, oil prices soared, with U.S. benchmark crude surpassing $106 per barrel, the highest price since 2014. The situation in energy markets is very serious and demands our full attention, IEA Executive Director Faith Birol said. Global energy security is under threat, putting the world economy at risk during a fragile stage of the recovery. Last month, the IEA said global demand for oil was 100.2 million barrels a day in the fourth quarter of 2021. Demand is expected to grow to an average of 100.6 million barrels a day this year as restrictions to limit the spread of COVID-19 are eased, the IEA said. Besides the United States, other members of the organization include Germany, France, the United Kingdom, Japan, and Canada. IEA members hold emergency stockpiles of 1.5 billion barrels of oil. The release amounts to 4% of stockpiles, or roughly 2 million barrels per day for 30 days. It's only the fourth time in history that the IEA has done a coordinated drawdown since the reserves were established in the wake of the Arab oil embargo in 1974. From the U.S. perspective, the price of crude oil determines a big portion of what drivers pay to fill up their cars with gasoline. The national average for a gallon of gas is $3.61, which is 26 cents more than a month ago and 90 cents more than a year ago, according to Motor Club Federation AAA. And this is from the Election 2022 page. Primary sets up Abbott-Beto showdown, by Will Weissert and Paul J. Weber, Associated Press, Austin. Republican Governor Greg Abbott will face Democrat Beto O'Rourke after voters in Texas opened what could be a lengthy, bruising primary season poised to reshape political power from state capitals to Washington. Both easily won their party's nomination for governor on Tuesday. Looking ahead, Abbott is in a commanding position in his bid for a third term, beginning his run with more than $50 million and campaigning on a strongly conservative agenda in America's largest Republican state. That leaves O'Rourke in an uphill bid to recapture the energy of his 2018 Senate campaign when he tapped into a burst of Democratic energy to nearly oust Ted Cruz. This group of people, and then some, are going to make me the first Democrat to be governor of the state of Texas since 1994, O'Rourke told supporters in Fort Worth, where he, in 2018, flipped Texas's largest red county. This is on us. This is all on us. A more competitive race was shaping up in the GOP primary for state attorney general. Incumbent Ken Paxton is hoping an endorsement from former President Donald Trump will help him fend off several challengers, including Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush, the nephew of one president and grandson of another, and U.S. Representative Louis Gohmert. Paxton led a failed lawsuit to overturn the 2020 presidential election and has for years faced securities fraud charges and an FBI investigation into corruption allegations. He has broadly denied wrongdoing. The primary was the first under tighter new Texas voting laws that, among other changes, muscled through by the GOP-controlled legislature, require mail ballots to now include identification, a mandate that counties blamed for thousands of rejected mail ballots even before Election Day. More than 10,000 mail ballots around Houston alone were flagged for not complying. Technical issues also caused problems in Texas's largest county. Paper jams and paper tears in voting machines would take a couple of days to work through while counting, said Isabel Longoria, Harris County's elections administrator. Several voting sites around Houston were also short-staffed, she said, causing tensions in some locations. Democrats and Republicans bickering with each other, stealing each other's machines, hiding each other's paper, Longoria said. At the end of the day, they were able to help voters. The first primary of the 2022 campaign began as the U.S. slowly moves out of the deepest lows of a pandemic that has raged for nearly 2 years. But that's tempered by inflation reaching a decades high level and a burgeoning war in Europe. There are also persistent questions about the country's commitment to basic democratic principles after many GOP leaders, including candidates across Texas, have tied themselves to Trump's lie that the 2020 election was stolen. Texas's rapid growth, driven by more than 4 million new residents, has shifted once solidly red suburbs away from Republicans, but the GOP has countered with new restrictions on voting and redrawn maps that left fewer competitive congressional districts. That means the primary winners mostly had strong chances to cruise in November and head to Congress next year. While much of the attention in this GOP-dominated state was on Republicans, Democrats faced challenges of their own. The party hasn't won a statewide office since 1994, and on Tuesday, nine-term U.S. Representative Henry Cuellar was trying to avoid becoming the first Democratic member of Congress to lose a primary this year. He's facing progressive Jessica Cisneros and is contending with the fallout of a recent FBI raid on his home, though he has denied wrongdoing. The primary also tested Republican efforts to more aggressively court Hispanic voters. Counties along the state's border with Mexico, long a stronghold for Democrats, were on track to smash Republican turnout levels compared with recent elections. That was the latest warning sign for Democrats who are trying to hold the line with Hispanic voters who swung toward former President Donald Trump in 2020. Republicans are betting that the Texas primaries will be the first step toward them retaking Congress in November, pointing to President Joe Biden's low approval ratings, spiking inflation, and anger about the chaotic withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. Monica Carter, who voted at a polling station in River Oaks, one of Houston's wealthiest neighborhoods, cast her ballot in the Republican primary and said she thought rising rates of crime is out of hand. The police force needs to be reinforced, said Carter, 66. History is also on the GOP's side. The party controlling the White House has lost congressional seats in the first midterm race every election cycle this century, except in 2002, after the September 11th terrorist attacks. But the fight over the party's future is much fiercer than it was 20 years ago. U.S. Representative Van Taylor of North Texas, for instance, has become a target for some on the right after he voted to certify Biden's electoral victory and to create an independent commission to investigate the Capitol insurrection. The Republican now faces four primary challengers who have largely refused to accept Biden's victory and have tried to minimize the insurrection. National Democrats say Trump's outsized GOP influence and an economy roaring back from the pandemic may help them counter political precedent. Still, disagreements between the party's progressive and more moderate congressional wings helped doom Build Back Better, a sweeping Biden-backed spending and social programs package. Cisneros is one of three Texas progressives who could secure Democratic nominations in House districts blue enough to all but guarantee they'll be headed to Congress. A 28-year-old immigration attorney who supports Medicare for All, Cisneros nearly toppled Cuellar during Texas's 2020 primary. She still has to overcome Cuellar's strong name recognition, though.
To Your Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, your recent article on the benefits of coffee recommended skipping the cream and sugar. Is your point to skip the cream and sugar because there is no added benefit? Or does the cream and sugar negate some of the benefits of the coffee? Answer. Cream is high in saturated fat, which is probably not good for you, and excess sugar is likewise not a healthy option. If you like a little in your coffee, enjoy it. Just don't be like the guy I saw recently who asked for 14 sugars for his coffee.
Wife shocked by husband's extracurricular activity. Dear Abby, for Wednesday, March 2nd. Dear Abby, I've been married for 31 years. I recently found out my husband belongs to a singles group. The group meets once a week, and my husband never misses a meeting. I went with him to their most recent one and realized it is made up of mostly women. My husband knew all of them, particularly one named Lauren, who he said he found interesting. I suspect that he is too interested in her. Our marriage isn't great. Sex is infrequent because he has ED and does nothing about it. He's obsessed about his weight and works out 4 times a week. He's not a good communicator and has become secretive. I'm worried that he may have something going on with Lauren, and I'm very anxious about it. I don't know what to do. Please advise. We have gone to marriage counseling, but it didn't help. Surprised, but not surprised. Dear Surprised, that a married man would join a singles group is galling. The purpose of singles groups is for eligible individuals to meet each other. That this was hidden from you until recently isn't a good sign, but consider yourself lucky you were able to attend that meeting. Contact your physician and ask to be screened for STDs in case your husband has discovered Viagra since joining the singles group. Because he isn't using an erection enhancer with you doesn't mean he may not have been using it with someone else, Lauren, for instance. Protect yourself and your financial interests. Consult an attorney and a CPA to establish what and where the marital assets are and what you are entitled to in case of a divorce. The CPA can help with that if it becomes necessary. Then ask your husband what he expects from socializing with single women and whether he wants to stay married. You have my sympathy. Dear Abby, I've been dating Carl a little over a year. Our relationship has been on and off because I haven't been happy with him. Every time we break up, Carl seems to have a way of pulling me right back in. I'm divorced. He's legally separated. He works about 18 hours a day at 2 jobs, and I get to see him only one day a week. Carl's kids want nothing to do with me, or with him for that matter. Now, for the 4th time, and against my better judgment, I've given him another chance. Guess what? I am right back where we were before. What's wrong with me? Carl is not a bad guy. He would bend over backward for me. The problem is, I am not in love with him. I feel like I'm stuck in a dead-end relationship. How do I break up with him? It's hard to talk to him about anything because he's always at work. Same old, same old. Dear Same, end the relationship by telling Carl you are not in love with him. You plan to date others, and you don't want to see him again. It shouldn't come as a shock in light of the fact that you have broken things off several times before. If he wants to see you after that, refuse and stick to it. Because his feelings for you are not reciprocated, it is kinder than stringing him along.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the 2nd hour's reading of the newspapers.